Hey, thanks so much for listening to this message. My name is Jason, and I'm one of the ministers here at the Madison Church of Christ. It's our hope and prayer that the teaching you hear today will bless your life and draw you closer to God. If you're ever in the Madison area, we'd love for you to stop by and study the Bible with us on Sundays at 5 p.m. or Wednesdays at 7 p.m. If you have questions about the Bible or want to know more about the Madison Church, you can find us online at madisonchurch.org. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast, as well as our sermons podcast, Madison Church of Christ Sermons. Thanks again for stopping by. I hope this study is a blessing to you.
Okay, so we have Madison Buford tonight, and she says, "Hi, I'm Madison Buford. My family moved to Florence, Alabama, after my dad got out of the Air Force when I was 5. I lived in Florence until I married my best friend, Christopher, aka Chris, in 2016, and we moved to Limestone County. We started attending Madison Church of Christ in the spring of 2017. Madison Church of Christ was much bigger than what I thought I wanted, but we have felt at home here. I love being a backup helper for Mommy and me and Cradle Roll One. I really enjoy my third year being part of a Flourish group, and I'm a full-time logistics analyst for a government contractor and a full-time mommy. And man, don't you juggle it all, girl. My children are Corder, who will be 5 next week, James, who's 3 years old, and Baylor, who's 3 months old. I love being their mom," she says. And then we have Jennifer Mobley, and I just want to brag on your husband because he wrote her intro. Did you not want to write it, or did he? She said, "I don't write intros." So her husband, Will Waldron, took it upon himself to write her intro for her, and it was so cute. And he's probably, if he hears this on the podcast, he's going to be like, "Oh, cute." But he knows it's cute. Okay. So cute, because he wrote it in the Dr. Seuss style cadence, which I thought was really fun. So this is what Will came up with. So cute. Emma will love this. Okay, here we go. "Please listen up close. We have someone to greet. With a smile that is kind and a spirit that's sweet. She's married to Will and a mother of 3, with a master's in special ed, smart as can be. She leads the playgroup for preschoolers too, and co-led the CYP, a big job to do. From second grade Bible class to elementary school, as a trained and true teacher, she has every tool. She's ready to lead us and teach us the way. So let's give her a hand. She's our speaker today." We can clap in here. So we get to hear from these two. I'm so excited. And we'll start with Madison.
So thank you for asking me to speak tonight. I really appreciate it. I also want to say thank you for all the women who have stood up here, shared their lessons and their scriptures, and just their stories. It's been really inspiring to listen to them. Even if I'm not here, I listen to them on the podcast every week. After weeks of trying to figure out what I wanted to speak about tonight, I always thought about the verse that I always seem to go back to when I'm overwhelmed or I have anxiety about a situation or situations. Philippians 4:6. "Never worry about anything, but in every situation, let God know what you need in prayers and requests when giving thanksgiving." There is a lot more to this story, and it would take me more than 15 minutes to share, so I want to tell you about the night that forever changed my life as a Christian and a person. A little backstory. My first son, Corder, was diagnosed at 24 weeks in utero with hypoplastic left heart syndrome. Basically, it means his heart is underdeveloped or non-existent, and in his case, is basically non-existent. He would need 3 open heart surgeries to survive. He's had all 3, and he will eventually need a heart transplant. Corder was born on April 28th, 2021. The first open heart surgery was May 4th. He was discharged from the hospital on June 14th. We were home in Harvest for 2 weeks when everything changed on June 28th. The cardiac team asked Chris and I to drive from Harvest to Children's for observation because Corder was no longer keeping down his speeds. His breathing was shallow and rapid, his heart rate was elevated, and he was crying because he was in so much pain, and we couldn't figure out why. Of course, we said yes. Each of us packed a bag to recorder. We said bye to the dogs in the house, not knowing we wouldn't be home for 5 months. As Chris and I got into the car, I placed the O2, oxygen, and heart rate monitor on quarter for peace of mind. Chris was driving a little above the speed limit because we knew quarter was in bad shape. Quarter started crying. Couldn't get him calmed down. We were too far from Huntsville Hospital to turn around, so we just had to keep going. The crying continued until it didn't. And we knew we were in trouble. We were right at the 299 exit on Interstate 65, and that's the Dodge City exit, if anybody wants to know. And I had Quarter out of the car seat before Chris could even get pulled over to the side of the road. Chris and I looked at each other from the rearview mirror, and I knew if I didn't do CPR, we would lose our little boy. The compressions lasted for 5 minutes until he started breathing on his own. I was screaming inside to God, it is not his turn to go home yet. He has a purpose on this earth and we don't know it yet. Please don't give him his wings. Please, Lord, I'm begging you. Chris called 911 for help, then the cardiac team for guidance, which we had to do on two separate phones, and prepared the oxygen tank. I started compressions again for another 5 minutes because Quarter stopped breathing again. Chris placed the nose cannula underneath Quarter's nose. He turned oxygen on 5 liters. We knew we had maybe 10 minutes max, probably 5 minutes of good oxygen. Even with oxygen, his oxygen was still reading low. When help arrived on the side of the Interstate of 65 and cars are just blazing by, they couldn't stop to call a helicopter because that wasn't normal for Dodge City. And EMTs did not have the equipment for a 2-month-old. The EMT walked up to the car and said, "Mom, I'm gonna take him a run, follow me." So I did. Chris handed me the phone for the cardiac team so I could give him all the information, but I couldn't give him any because they didn't have the equipment we needed. We drove up the exit ramp on 299 exit to the volunteer fire station to wait on the helicopter. When the helicopter arrived, the team assessed Quarter in the ambulance and asked me nicely to get off the elements so they can assess Quarter completely. Only the patient could ride on the helicopter. This little 2-month-old boy in an orange onesie looked so small getting on the helicopter without Chris and me. There must have been nothing going on in Dodge City that day because there was probably 50 people surrounded us that day. And all said, "We're praying for you," before we left. Chris called everyone he could think of to pray for Quarter as he drove to Children's Hospital. I text everyone to pray in my phone because I didn't think I could. I was angry with God. I wanted to yell at God and ask him why. My son had already been through enough. I pulled the Bible app up on my phone and just said, "Angry." And then this verse came up. Ephesians 4:26-27. "Please be angry without sinning. Don't go to bed angry. Don't give the devil any opportunity to work." Once we arrived at the hospital, we were asked to go to the 4th floor heart unit waiting room, and updates would be provided. 1 hour later, the first doctor told us to prepare for the worst. By the way, it was during COVID, so it was only Chris and I. No parents, no grandparents, nobody. So it was just Chris and I. And we relied on the cardiac team and nurses heavily during that time. 2 hours later, the second doctor sat with us for a while and asked who did CPR. I raised my hand. Me. I didn't want it to be my fault if my little boy didn't make it. The doctor looked at me and said, "You saved your little boy's life." 3 hours later, the nurse told us we could go see Corder, but warned us about the equipment and the color of Corder. We walked into the CVICU room and looked at our bluish-gray little boy. I told Chris I needed a moment, and I walked outside. As I walked outside, I took a big breath and just cried. I tried to pray, and all I could do was yell at God. I asked God the same thing 7 hours earlier and said, "He is not ready to come home yet. He is not ready. I'm begging you, please help him." The doctors and nurses told us if the numbers did not improve that he would be placed on ECMO. ECMO was the last resort. It was because of the risk. He's had a stroke. He had seizures previously. We just couldn't do it. We just didn't want to, because we knew there's a possibility he wouldn't get off of it. Overnight, Corder's numbers miraculously improved. The doctors, nurses did not understand why. The only doctor, and it was the same doctor that sat with us, and said it could only have been God. Chris and I both thought it was our prayer warriors who never stopped praying for him. 1 Thessalonians 5:6-18. Always be joyful, never stop praying. Whatever happens, give thanks, because it's God's will in Christ Jesus, and that you do this. My faith has been tested during Corder's heart journey. There has been many ups and downs, but God has always been by my side every step of the way. I try to remember Corder without any scars on his body. You can see in that first picture. I remember touching his chest the day of his first heart surgery, hoping to remember how it felt like. I don't remember, and honestly, I'm glad I don't. Each scar on his body reminds me of the prayers he received for him, the doctors, the nurses, other family members, Chris, and myself. Even when my prayers didn't feel like enough, or I was just so angry to pray, I knew there were prayers being heard for Corder and us. Deuteronomy 31:6. Be strong and courageous. Do not tremble. Don't be afraid of them. The Lord your God is the one who is going with you. He won't abandon you. He won't leave you. There were many times Chris and I thought we would leave the hospital without Corder in our lives. Maybe it is selfish for me to want Corder to be on this earth longer, but I'm enjoying watching him grow up. If you look at him and didn't know his history, you would never know he has half a heart and he's had multiple heart surgeries. He loves baseball, loves football, and loves chicken wings. Luckily, he's able to play baseball. He wants to play football so bad that that's a hard no. But he enjoys playing baseball every minute. He loves playing with his Hot Wheels, especially the cars down the track. You might see dents in our wall if you look closely. You've probably seen Corder and James wrestling in the hall after Bible class, even though they've been told multiple times to stop. I'm glad Corder was given a chance to be a big brother to Baylor and James. He might play rough with James, but he adores his sister Baylor. He always reminds me, "She's such a cutie. I love her dress." She's not wearing her dress. Still, I like her dress. Or my favorite, "Mommy, you forgot her bow." And she has to have one because she's a girl. God chose Chris and I to be parents to Corder, James, and Baylor. Chris and I are able to lean on each other and help each other through difficult situations. Chris and I handle each situation completely differently. Chris finds a positive side of everything with humor, or he talks your ear off. If you want to hear a joke, ask him. It's pretty terrible. He might have been slapped by a nurse who is now one of our best friends. I, on the other hand, bottle everything up. And I think about the worst case scenario, so I'm not blindsided when it happens. Cordero's heart condition might have not been our plan for us, but it was God's. At the end of the day, we wouldn't change our experience or our journey for us. As we reflect on this particular difficult situation, which I feel like I've had for the last 5 years, I learned how to talk to God as a friend and to be honest with God with my words. God is always with you, and his plan is greater than ours. Trust in him in the good, the bad, and the ugly, whatever it may be. Jeremiah 29:11. I know the plans that I have for you, declares the Lord. The plans for peace and not disaster. Peace to give you a future filled with hope. Thank you for your time.
Before we get started with the main part of my lesson, I want to tell you a little bit about myself. This is my family. Family is very important to me. I'm a daughter, sister, aunt, mother, wife. This is my side of the family with my mom and dad, my brothers and their families, and our family. Whenever I was 9, we moved to Madison. These are some lovely pictures of me. And the first one was Lads, I'm assuming Bible Bowl with 4 of us, and then 2 different retreats with the beautiful Bangs. It's a great time in my life. I was active in the youth group. I did just about everything I could, except for camp after 5th grade, because who really wants to do camp after 5th grade? I graduated from Job Jones and went to UNA and got my bachelor's in elementary ed and early childhood education. After college, I moved home, started grad school, and got a job teaching in Madison City. During that time, I met Will, middle picture, baby Jen and Will, and after a dating false start, we got married in 2018. We now have 3 beautiful kids. We have Zaya, who's 5, Jonathan, who's 3, and Brooklyn, who's 2. After we got married, we stayed in Madison for a year before we moved to Arkansas for Will to teach physics at Harding. We were in Searcy for 18 months, had Isaiah, then another 18 months, and had John. A month before John turned 1, we had an adventure day. We went to a fish hatchery, a creek, and a train depot. After that day, we got home, put the boys down for the naps, and while Will and I were relaxing, I heard a weird sound from John's monitor. And at first I thought he was recovering from crying. Whenever I cry, like the deep cries, I can't breathe afterwards. So I'm like, it sounds like I'm like hyperventilating. So at first I thought that was John. And then I sat there for a minute longer and I thought, that doesn't sound right. So we ran into John's room and we didn't know if he was either choking on something or having a seizure. So I'm trying to do the baby Heimlich, like feeding my child, because we live 23 minutes out of town. So I knew by the time anybody got to us, if he was not breathing, he wouldn't have a chance. We call 911, and as we're calling 911, we're driving to the main road because we lived on a gravel road on an easement, so the ambulance wouldn't be able to find us. Will was in his boxers and not even a t-shirt, just his boxers, while standing at the side of the road. That's his favorite part of the story. once the ambulance got there, I got in the ambulance with John, and Will went back to the house to get Isaiah, who was napping, get some clothes, and get a bag for all of us. He was also calling our friends to see who could take care of Isaiah. At Unity, Searcy's hospital, John was not coming out of the seizure like they thought he should, and he had an aftershock. That, plus him being under 1, they med-flighted us immediately to Little Rock. So John and I got to ride the helicopter there. That was such a scary but weirdly peaceful time during this event. John wasn't having seizures anymore, and I knew he had medical people to help him, but I was sitting there with nothing else to do. So it was just a weird, peaceful time, but so scary because we didn't know what was coming next. Will drove to meet us there, and John was admitted to the PICU. He had an EEG, which was super fun, with a little one that wants to sleep but can't with all that stuff all over his head. He kept trying to turn over, and they wouldn't let him. So we had to hold him, and here in the other picture here, he looks semi-happy because he's just happy to be held by somebody at that point. The next morning, we got to go to a regular room and wait for all the results. They were running tests to see what caused his seizures. His EEG was normal, but one of the tests to determine what caused the seizure came back inconclusive. They believe that one of the IV lines on his hands and on his arms got contaminated. And so they think it was just contamination, but they didn't know for sure. So they didn't want to send us home. We stayed there for 4 days with all of this, and they decided it was a fever seizure with an unknown cause and gave us medicine in case he ever has another seizure. So here's some more pictures. Sleepy little John. He was so mad at us. And we also had to go to the store to get a passy because we couldn't find his passy anymore. So he was finally happy to get a passing. So during this time, I thought of several Bible verses that helped us through. The first one is 1 Peter 5, 7 through 10. Casting all your anxieties on him because he cares for you, be sober-minded, be watchful. Your adversary, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion, seeking someone to devour. Resist him, firm in your faith, knowing that the same kinds of suffering are being experienced by your brotherhood throughout the world. And after you have suffered a little while, the God of all grace, who has called you to his eternal glory in Christ, will himself restore, confirm, strengthen, and establish you. This verse really resonated with me during this time because it was easy with all the sitting we were doing to just worry and worry. When this happens, it is easy to let Satan get to you rather than relying on God. The next part of the verse, be firm in your faith, knowing that the same kinds of suffering are being experienced by your brotherhood throughout the world. It is easy when you're in times of trial to think that things are just happening to you. So this verse really reminds you, is a reminder that you are not alone. And even though the verse doesn't specifically say it, I also think of it as a reminder to rely on others in the brotherhood during these rough times. We had so many people from our church in Searcy reaching out to us through texts and phone calls and offering to bring us food. And then the verse ends, with the suffering we will be done and we will be restored, confirmed, strengthened, and established with him. Another verse is Isaiah 40, 29 through 31. He gives power to the faint, and to him who has no might, he increases strength. Even youth shall faint and be weary, and young men shall fall exhausted. But they who wait for the Lord shall renew their strength, and they shall mount up with wings like eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint. When I think of this verse, I think of John so weak and powerless in the hospital. The part of the verse that talks about the Lord renewing their strength really is empowering. I know that this is really talking about heaven, but at that moment, I was thinking about it in the real world, in the world that we were in. But I knew either way, he was going to be strong one way or another. And for me, it reminded me to rely on God for my strength rather than relying on myself. And then the last one, Psalm 55, 22. Cast your burden on the Lord and he will sustain you. He will never permit the righteous to be moved. This is a reminder to rely on God. He is here no matter what we are going through. It is so easy to rely on ourselves when things are going great and running to God when it is not so good, but we shall rely on him no matter what is going on in our lives. So John's seizures impacted our lives greatly. It gave me a scare, and I realized that I was kind of taking for granted my kids. I would allow daily stresses to get in my way and not enjoy them. And so this really told me, take a step back, really enjoy your kids. Also, being at Children's, we saw so many kids going through so many different trials that were heartbreaking yet encouraging. There was one kid who had been there his whole life for over a year, and his second family was the hospital attendants. And he got to leave that day, like one of the days we were there. So they had a big celebration, a party with tons of food, and then they got to go home. And you could see everybody crying from joy and just sadness of this family member leaving. One other way that John's seizure impacted our lives was his seizure was the push to decide to have us come back to Madison. Our church family in Searcy was so helpful and supportive, but we realized we wanted to be back with family. This, plus a couple other reasons, led us to jump at the chance for Will to teach at UAH. Now, we had Brooklyn in March of 24, right after he had that seizure, and then we moved back to Madison 2 months after she was born, when Will got a job teaching physics at UAH. We stayed with my parents for several months while looking for a house and settling in. We are now living in a house off of Zurt. Now, this past December, Mom and Dad came over to our house right before Christmas to pick up the kids so that we could have a day to finish our last minute shopping and get a couple things together. We were hanging a mirror, and so we were running a little bit behind. Will ran to get a shower while the rest of us ate lunch. John had been clingy that morning, but I thought, oh, he's leaving me, and they always jump on top of me whenever they know they're leaving. But during lunch, I looked over and John was laying on his chair. And I asked him to get up and I tried talking to him when I realized he was having another seizure. So I ran to get Will with John in my arms, but Will had locked the door because Isaiah was trying to go in. And since Mom and Dad were there, anyway, so I'm banging on the door. And not only is Will in the shower, but Will has a hearing aid. And of course he's in the shower, so it's out too. So I'm banging on the door and he thought it was Isaiah trying to get in. So he didn't come out for a while. So I get John, lay him down. And Will comes out, and this time he's only in a towel. Will said he's never going to take off his clothes again, so John doesn't have a seizure. By this point, I had John on his side with his medicine ready. Dad had the kids in the front room, and Mom was staying with me in the living room. We had 911 on the phone with us, and the ambulance was on the way. Our Little Rock neurologist suggested to record John if he had another seizure. There were so many questions they were asking that we didn't know how to answer. Like, was he looking this way? Was he doing all these things? And so we didn't know. So Mom was recording this. which is really funny. At the end, we actually debated, should we put the video up? And Will decided no, because I said I could cut out your part, but he didn't want that. So also, it's sad to see John like that. But my sister-in-law saw the video, and she's like, is that? And I was like, oh, I meant to turn that off before Will came out. John came out of the seizure by the time the paramedics came, and before the 5 minutes were up, and after 5 minutes, we were supposed to give him his medicine. So they recommended that we keep John at home, not bring him to the hospital, so not to expose him to anything else, to give him another fever. We called our Little Rock specialist, and they said to alternate medicine to just to make sure he doesn't have another fever, and to make sure he didn't get another seizure for another couple days. At that point, Mom and Dad took the other two for the afternoon to let us rest and spend time with John. He now has a neurologist specialist at Vandy, because we had forgot to transfer over once we moved, you know. And this doctor also ran an EEG and believes that the seizure was also a fever seizure. God was definitely with us that day. It had been over 2 years for John's first seizure, so we'd stopped carrying his medicine around with us. So if Mom and Dad had taken him on time, they would have been in the car without his medicine. And luckily the seizure stopped, but who would have known? So we didn't have to do that. Now we have the medicine at every place. There's one here, just in case we need it. Most fever seizures end when the kids are around 5 years old, and at the latest, 6. So we're waiting for just a few more years, and then we're hopefully past all of this. During crazy times like I talked about today, and day-to-day times, Will and I have been trying to focus on God. For ourselves, we try to do individual Bible studies, couple Bible studies, and studies with others. A group of women from the preschool family, Connect Group, have been doing Bible studies on the YouVersion app. These have a Devo, scriptures to read, and a place for discussion. We have done several of these, and we're going to meet up soon. Will has been attending the preschool family men's Bible study every third Thursday of the month and working on an MDiv from Harding, because we have time. Why not? As a family, we have been reading from a Bible book each morning and having devotional time each night. During the devotional, we pray, lead songs, and talk about a Bible story. We also work on memory work for the kids. This ranges from Bible class songs to memorizing scriptures. We also try to stay involved in the church. I help organize the preschool playgroup that gets together once a month. If you want to join, just let me know. And Will works with the college students here. We also try to spend time with our church family through inviting people to our house and just hanging out with others. Our family is very young, and we're learning new things to do each day in regards to encouraging our children in their faith growth. We ask our friends what books they're reading as parents, what their books they're reading to their kids, and just any ways they help to grow their kids. I would love to learn from you. What have you done that has been successful to share the Lord with your kids? Please feel free to share specific activities, memory work, devos, anything that could help those of us who are still raising kids. I have my phone number up here. And if I get anything, I will try to share it with our ladies' Facebook group. Thank you for letting me talk to you guys tonight.
So awesome. And once again, not planned, but amazing how your topics coincide so much with health and the health scares and things like that. That boggles my mind how that happens and it's not planned. So thank you both so, so much. That was very, very wonderful and very rich. And we appreciate you. We had a few minutes and I was going to mention something that I ran across today that really stuck out to me. I came across this video and this man, I guess he's a preacher, but he had a microphone, he was on stage, and he said, you know, sometimes kids ask me, like, are you thankful that you're a musician? Are you thankful that you're following God's will for your life, that you're living this out? And I mean, isn't that cool? And he'll say, being a musician is not God's will for my life. And he said, actually, none of our professions are technically God's will for our life. Because he said, what if my hands get chopped off and I can't play the piano anymore? Did I miss God's will for my life? And he said, what if I get in a car accident and my brain stops working and I can't write lyrics anymore? Did I miss God's will for my life? And that hit me like a ton of bricks, because a lot of times we equate our jobs or our roles or whatever season of life we're in to his will for our life, or that's, you know, if we don't fulfill that we're missing something. But if we really think about it, it could, any of our roles or any of our jobs could change in an instant, no matter what. You know, it's a lot of, most everything, well, everything is out of our control. And so this was really encouraging to me because it takes a lot of pressure off of us to think that we know what God's will for our life is at any given time, or that we might not be following His will here or there. So it's these two Bible verses that he brought out that I wanted to share because it's so encouraging, because it really does take a lot of pressure off of you, because it applies to any point of our life, no matter where we are. And the first one was in 1 Thessalonians, it says in chapter 5, verse 16, "Rejoice always, pray continually, give thanks in all circumstances, for this is God's will for you." And that just hit me like a ton of bricks. I thought, oh, I've heard that before, but not in that context. And so it was very calming and peaceful to realize, hey, if I'm just rejoicing in whatever situation I'm in, if I'm praying continually and I'm giving thanks, He's happy with that. And I don't have to worry, am I reaching this goal or am I hitting this milestone as much as I usually do. And the second verse was Micah 6, verse 8 that he referred to. And it says, "He has shown you, O mortal, what is good and what the Lord requires of you. And it's to act justly and to love mercy and to walk humbly with your God." So he's saying, I've already told you what to do, and that is my will for you. And so I took that as very encouraging today. And I hope you do too, that we don't always have to have all the answers for our purpose, but that He's, or His will, that He's already given us that recipe to follow. So those were encouraging verses for me. I hope they are for you.